mad in spite of foam and spine, who cheered our crews and cheered again for showing how to fly. So here's the Coast Guard marching song. We sing on land or sea, crews serve and storm and howling gale, high shall our purpose be. Semper Paratus is our guide, our fame, our glory too, to fight, to save or fight and die. Aye, Coast Guard, we are for you.
And good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe. We're up in the captain's chair, back from our voyages and travels, with a very special program today because I have family with me and also a report from the trip to Amsterdam and any other catching up that we might feel necessary to do. My greetings today go to all of Captain Joe's people who are returning from and returning safely, because it is my wish and my hope and my command that all people return safely from their voyages and their travels, that they are returning safely from a journey. It may be a cruise, it may be a road trip, like the road trip that I just completed not too long ago, where I drove 3,000 miles across this great land of ours. If it may have been a family emergency or a family visit, which is what was the case with my trip to Amsterdam. So all of those people who are returning safely from those trips, this is your Captain Joe saying, welcome home, and that you that you are, as always, in the palm of my hand. And maybe it was because of that presence that you indeed had a safe trip. The binnacle list today, there are no crossings of the bar to report, happily. And in the meantime, however, several of my family who are here with me today have occupied places on the binnacle list and no longer do so. And it is my hope, my wish, and my command that they not have to occupy a place on the binnacle list again. I don't have any particular acute reports in the last 2 weeks, because it's been that long since we talked together. And it is hopefully that all of the people who are awaiting test results, and there are a number of them, and people who are under the care of a medical professional, you know that you are to follow the instructions of your medical professional, and that you then leave the binnacle list in the proper accepted way. I'm putting myself operationally on the binnacle list because I am confronted with the first day of the new panel board here at the Voice of Vashon, and it is an impressive thing. It has lights all over the place. Fortunately, I have Captain O'Brien to help me, because my potential for screwing this thing up is almost limitless. And since that is the case, Truman has set everything up for me, and hopefully we're going to be able to get through our half hour together without losing the signal or any of the other things that possibly can happen. So the next thing that we're going to do today is to introduce my family who is here. And I will make a parenthetical insertion here that this is not a family with whom I am connected by either blood or marriage, but through ties and connections which are just as strong. And I'm going to start with Ivy, and I will say here that I first met Ivy many, many years ago when I was the captain in Northwind, and she was a civilian employee of the command that I was to assume the following summer. But the first time that I met her, she was cleaning out a gear locker, and she was lying on the deck. And I walked in, and there was this pretty girl lying on the deck, cleaning out this gear locker, and that somehow gave me the idea that this was going to be a command. I did not know that I was going to go to be the commander there. So, Ivy, it is to you to speak into the mic and tell us how you and I are connected and who you are.
Hi, Captain. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here with you once again. You are amazing to all of us who know you, and a surprise and an astonishment that you do the things that you do. And I would like to read a little poem, if you will, about some of the feelings that I and others like me have, if I may.
Sure.
He is 91 years young, but time treats him gently as if even the years themselves stand at attention when he passes. He has known the world by its true names, the roar of the Southern Ocean, the blue hush of the Antarctic dawn, the creak of six proud ships answering his steady hand. A glacier carries his name, not carved by vanity, but by the quiet respect earned only in the coldest, truest corners of the earth. Since 1978, when our paths first crossed in Sault Ste. Marie, he has been the kind of man whose presence settles the room, a man who makes others stand taller without ever asking them to. He travels still, gathering family and friends like ports of call, leaving warmth in his wake, the way ships leave foam. And on evenings when the mountain glows and the sound turns to silver, you can almost see the outline of every voyage he ever made, a constellation of a life well-steered, well-lived, and deeply loved. For he is a legend, yes, but more than that. He is proof that some men do not simply grow older, they grow larger than life.
So I think we need to make it clear here that I did not write that for you.
No.
All right.
No, it's our tribute to you.
Thank you. It's lovely. And so for all of Captain Joe's people who may be a little bit skeptical, I did not write that.
No,
but Ivy and David, her husband David, who is the next one to talk, should he choose to do that. And Ivy's son, Kevin, and Kevin's wife, Janet, should they and themselves choose to talk, will be able to mitigate possibly the lovely sentiments that, because you and I go back not just to when I was your boss.
We were many Christmases together at our home.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so David, how about you talk a little bit about who you are, because you've got a very interesting story, and one of them is that you were a Jeepmeister.
Yes, I was responsible for the launch of one of the more successful years of the Jeep, and learned a lot from that. I am Ivy's husband, and I am honored to be here. This is my second time in the studio, and look forward to many more visits. Thank you so much.
That's right. We are not even contemplating anybody slowing down.
Yep.
And so, Kevin, it's your turn. And you need to come up to the mic. There we go.
Hi, Captain.
Hi,
it's
Kevin.
Good to see you today. I've known Captain Joe for almost 50 years, 48 years, and that surprises a lot of people when they hear that.
Sometimes it surprises me.
Yeah, I was in high school, and I'm 64 now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He's been a wonderful man to know over the years, especially back when I was a kid. He had this aura and command about him that you knew that you didn't want to mess with the guy, for one thing. And but he was very knowledgeable, and I don't think I've ever questioned his judgment on anything that he said. In a conversation we've had. And if I had to describe him, Captain Joe, I would call you a real man's man. That's how I would describe you. I mean, I have the utmost respect for you. And what you have done with your life, 10 times more than me. I'm a retired correction officer. I was pushing 30 years.
Yes.
But you've done so much more than that. And being a commander of Coast Guard ships and stuff like that, it's awesome. It's awe-inspiring, I mean, for people that want to go into that field. And I asked Captain Joe once if he would have stayed in the Coast Guard, and he said yes. So he probably even right now he'd like to be in the Coast Guard commanding a ship.
I would.
Yep. And so.
But the legs won't let me do it anymore.
No, no, mine either, and I'm only 64. So, but anyway, it's been a pleasure to know Captain Joe for a good portion of my life, and it's been a, like Dave said, it's been an honor, and I'm glad I get to come out here with my wife and visit him and do stuff. And he just treats us like we're just like these really special people, and we're just normal people, but he treats us like we're very special. So, Captain Joe, it's been a pleasure.
So I did not bring you all here to tell me what a good person I am. I am going to now count on your lovely wife, Janet, to tell one or two things which would confirm to Captain Joe's people that I am not all of these things that you all describe. Janet?
She needs to do that because your head's getting really big right now.
It is, yes. Yeah, with that poem got it started.
Yeah.
Hello, Captain. So Kevin and I are from Traverse City, Michigan, and I've been a part of this family for over 20 years, but I've only known Cap and Joe for about four,
That's right.
When we had Ivy's birthday party, which was a very special celebration too. And I feel very, very close to him. We seem to have just hit it off. I am his DDDF, his designated duty driver forever.
Yes, that's true.
Even though I haven't really driven him around much lately. It's our third time on the island with the captain. And when people ask me how I know Captain, and I explain, and the one thing I do tell them is he's the most interesting person I have ever met.
Huh.
Gee, there you go. There it is again.
Yeah, there it is again. So
I gotta try to think of a fault or two for you, sir. Can't think of it.
So so after I became the commander in the Sioux, and Ivy and owned a house, and we had many celebrations.
Did.
And it must be honestly reported that at that time, to all of Captain Joe's people who know that I am no longer a participant in the consumption of alcoholic beverages, that at that time I was an enthusiastic participant. And at some of those gatherings, some of those musterings in the house in Sault Ste. Marie, the big house in Sault Ste. Marie.
The big house, yeah.
I became part of Ivy's very much extended Canadian family. I knew her mother and her sister, and all of them were part of the life that we shared together in Sault Ste. Marie. And it's one of the reasons why the Sioux continues today to be one of the most special places in my life. And yesterday, Kevin asked me, what was the best place that I had actually lived? And I said that it was the Sioux. And that's true. What he did not ask me was which one was my favorite ship command. And I had a friend. In fact, it was my friend Michelle. That's the same Michelle that owns the chain of kitty vending machines here on the island. And she, for some reason, I don't know exactly why she did this, but she asked me what was my favorite command afloat. Well, all of you who are Captain Joe's people who have sailed with me know that I had a love affair with every ship and every crew that I commanded. And so it was really difficult for me to come up with an answer. And in fact, I fudged on the answer, and I said, you know, that you were asking a captain to make the same decision that parents make when they are asked, which one is your favorite child? And there is no such thing as a favorite child. Well, Kevin just held his hand up, but there's no such thing to a parent as a favorite child. There is a favoritism possibly of some of the traits and characteristics of each one's children. All kids grow up with characteristics that are somewhat less desirable at one time or another that parents have to deal with. Captains certainly have to deal with that with the crews that they are privileged to command. And so I had to tell her that it was not right or fair for me to make that. And I did not. Well, actually, I did. I'm not going to say which one it was on this, which ones, plural. All six of them were. That's how it finally ended up. So before we talk a little bit more amongst ourselves here as a family, I am obligated to give a quick report on my trip to Amsterdam. And it was to be with my friends who own two canal boats, and one of them is the one that they use when they have friends and family staying with them. And so I was privileged to stay with my son and my daughter-in-law and my much-loved friend and colleague from Stockholm, Professor Dr. Mark Reinhardt came from Stockholm and spent a couple of days with us, and we just had a glorious time. The owners of the boat were with us, sometimes in spirit and sometimes in reality, during the week that we were there. And we covered a huge amount of territory. My son, Sean, has a watch that calculates the number of steps. And at the end of one day in which we had walked farther than I have walked in many, many years, he interrogated his watch, and it told him that we had walked 4 miles. And I said, no, there's no way, possible way that I could have walked 4 miles. Well, Captain Joe, that's what the watch says. We walked 4 miles. And I said, well, we may have felt to me like we walked 25, but I don't believe that we actually walked 4 miles. So anyway, the trip there was on Iceland Air. I recommend Iceland Air. And the interesting thing about Iceland Air is that it collects everybody and flies them through Reykjavik. Airline code KEF, and it's the airline code is KEF because it's on the old Keflavik Air Force Base. And you can still see the buildings that were there from World War II. And they collect them from all over the United States, and they funnel them through Reykjavik, and then they fan out all over Europe. So I have to confess that I did use a pusher in Reykjavik because it's 35 miles from where you land and to go through passport control and then fan out, in my case, to Amsterdam. And I got a ride in Schiphol because it is absolutely enormous. And I just ended up with some lovely, lovely people. Coming back on the trip homeward bound, I had a pusher in Reykjavik, a lovely blonde girl, and I thought that she was Icelandic. And I said, you know, the Icelandic language is really difficult. I think it would be difficult. And she said, well, I don't speak it. Oh, well, why don't you speak it? And she said, because I come from Lithuania. And so I was pushed around by this beautiful Lithuanian girl. And at the end of the ride, I produced a 10 euro note. And she said, oh, no, I'm not, I won't take that. She said, it has been just a pleasure to help you. Because I had told her, I said, people like you make it possible for me to continue to travel. And she said, I will not take anything. It has been just an enjoyable thing for me to be able to help you. Things in life happen like that. And it's really great when it does. So all of the traffic, all of my flying on Iceland Air is was just perfect, as perfect as that sort of thing can be. And I was in the front of the airplane. I made many trips to the forward head, but I report here that I did not have to use any of the self-insertable Foley things. I am hopeful that Foley is beyond me forever. Ivy Gnarl, in
yes, sir.
All of our, so what was your, and I know the answer to this question, of course, what was your job in my command at the base? And mention why it is that we can't seem to remember who your immediate boss was.
You know, I was talking on the way here about how I can remember names of almost everybody in my past. Obscured, you know, as they may be, I can still remember their last name. For some inexplicable reason, you can't and I can't remember this man's last name. And I try almost on a daily basis. Sometimes I dream about it. But yes, my job was to, we were working on the Loran system, all the aids to navigation up and down the, help me on this one, the St. Mary's River on into Whitefish Bay over to
Lake Superior.
Mm-hmm. And so that they were automating all of them. And that was part of my job, was to work on getting that done.
And
single-handedly, I'm sure.
Right. So one of the stories about that was one of our lights was St. Martin's Reef.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out to St. Martin's Reef, and the chief out there was, he said he had a box in which lighthouse kerosene was shipped when it was a kerosene light. And and he said, "Captain Joe, you ought to take this as a souvenir." And I said, "Chief, I can't take that." And he said, "Well, if you don't take it, then it will go on the fire because we're burning all of the mm-hmm. stuff that we're not taking with us." So I said, "Okay, in that case, I will take it with me." And it traveled with me all the way to here. And one day I realized that Point Robinson Light had, which we all were out there together on Sunday, that Point Robinson Light had a kerosene light, and that the kerosene would have been shipped in those crates. So I donated it to the lighthouse, and it is now used to hold magazines in one of the houses. But when I told Mary R. that I was going to donate it, she said, "Joseph, might there not be something else that you would also want to donate? There's an awful lot of stuff here." "No, Mary R., I'm only donating the box." So that's it. So over to you, David. And in you had mentioned that you were part of the Jeep family. And so I have a lot of people that are interested in motor cars. What was your job did you start with Willie's Overland?
Yeah, I was in the building of Willie's Overland. It was still standing from the many years. I think they moved there in the 20s, and I was still there. And shortly after I went there, they tore the building down and moved to the new Jeep plant. But my responsibility was quality, the quality of the parts coming in from suppliers, the quality of assembly, and making sure everything was done correctly. It was a challenge. It was satisfying, and it gave me an ownership in almost every model that went out off that assembly line.
Great. So, Kevin, you are a retired corrections officer from the Michigan prison system, and you were in the prison that was set up out at Kinchlow Air Force Base. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So go from there and talk a little bit about the challenges that a corrections officer has to deal with.
I loved the job the first 15 years. And then after that, you start to burn out. But overall, it is a very difficult job, but it's a very satisfying job. It had great pay, great benefits. That was probably a driving force in itself because I had to support myself and family and stuff. So you have to find something that you think you might be good at. And as it turned out, I was very good at it. I started at the old, it was called KCF. It was the main part of the base, the Kinchelow Air Force Base, before they shut it down. And at the cafeteria, the base cafeteria was turned into the mess hall and stuff like that. And to provide jobs for the prisoners, they had people, it was almost like probably captain, like officers dining. Okay, when us as officers, we went in there and they took care of everything. I mean, they cleared our table, they asked if we want more water, all that stuff, to come around with their napkins and stuff like that. It didn't last forever. It lasted probably from 1988 to probably 97, somewhere in there. And then they stopped doing it. But talk about getting spoiled. I mean, yeah, as far as that part goes, and the food back then for the prisoners and the staff was just impeccable. I mean, it was better than probably half the restaurants out there. The prisoners themselves, yeah, there was good days and there was bad days. I will say this much about the prisoners. There's all of them, in fact. There's good people that did a bad, that can do a bad thing, but they're still good people. There's good people that can do a horrible thing, but there's still parts of them that are good. And then there's people that do terrific things, and that's the main reason why they're there. Those people generally don't get out, or they're going to do 20 years plus. The easiest prisoners to get along with and to be able to make them accept your way of running the unit, and actually you get their help, is with the lifers. Because they're not going anywhere, and they want a quiet unit. They want it to run smooth. And they make sure that I knew if there was something I need to attend to, or if they wanted me to get lost for a little while. Mm-hmm. Sometimes things just took care of themselves. But if I had it all to do over again, I got to retire when I was 54 years old, because correction officers, state police, and DNR in Michigan only have to do a minimum of 25 years and they can retire, as long as they're 51. So I've been retired for 10 years and I'm 64. And that has been, I don't know a lot of people that can do that. And so it's paid off in the long run. The life expectancy for a correction officer when they retire in Michigan is 4 years.
Wow.
And I got 10 in. But I had to quit drinking. I was a heavy drinker. And in fact, so much so that I do 3 or 4 AA meetings every week. And I've got 10 years with no drinking. And I quit smoking probably 3 years before that. And if I wouldn't have done those two things, I wouldn't be here. Because the day I retired, I started drinking over a fifth a day for 7 weeks. And then I haven't had a drop since.
So since you mentioned AA, it is worthwhile pointing out here to my island listeners that there are at least 2 and maybe more AA units here on the island.
Yes, I have attended meetings on the island.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a great meetings. Yep.
Okay, Janet, 1 minute for you, and
yes.
then we wrap up. What would you like to tell Captain Joe's people all over the world about, about anything? Pick something.
On my bucket list?
Yes, there you go, on your bucket list.
We're going whale watching.
All right.
And I can't wait.
All right. So Captain Joe's people all over the world, we've all too quickly come to the end of our time together. As always, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And we are going to, Janet and Kevin are going whale watching, and Ivy and David and I are going to do, we're going to do the Space Needle. Yes, we're going to do the Space Needle and a couple of other things as well. This is your Captain Joe. As always, I am on station and watching properly, and with much aloha and love to all of my family for a great program, at least a great program to me, hopefully to everybody else.